Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt, and my pronouns are they, them, theirs. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO as we call it, and it is now one of the longest-running queer improv shows in New York City. During the show, our storytellers share their coming-out stories, and then our improvisers bring them to life. Our podcast is a little different. We have a storyteller share their stories, but instead of folks improvising, we talk about them. And I'm super excited about our guest that we have here today, Bloom Davis, they, them pronouns. Hi, Bloom.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you. I'm so happy that you're here. So we all have multiple coming out stories, and I would love to hear one of yours or whatever you'd like to share with us.
Sure. So the first time I ever remember coming out, I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I told my mom that I was a boy and that I was going to grow up and marry a girl. And her response was, no, you're a girl and you're going to grow up and you're going to marry someone who looks like daddy. And I thought, I was so caught off guard and I was like, oh, okay. You know, like when you're young, you're just told usually to be who people want you to be around them. And I just kind of like took that at face value. And, I don't remember ever consciously thinking about my queerness. I do remember one experience where I had this really flamboyant dance teacher and I was really perturbed by him and turned off, and I would pretend to be sick so I didn't have to go to his class. And I totally just, I was internalizing all these messages of like what a man should be, what a woman should be. And just kind of feeling really uncomfortable around this person. And looking back on that, I regret it. I feel like that is kind of a common experience in Texas to reject, or in being where I'm from, like rejecting this narrative of otherness. And then I went to high school and I had a boyfriend, and then I had this moment where I realized I thought that he was gay and we broke up, and later on, I was like, oh, like, I think I'm gay. Are you? And he was like, no. And I was like, oh, man, I definitely thought we were going to be, like, two gay best friends. And then I had this moment in high school where I had a crush on two people. And it was this cis guy and this trans man. But at the time, he wasn't out. So I was like, okay, I have this decision. Like, I can come out as queer or I can date this cis guy, and I chose the person that would have me come out as queer. And at that time, I didn't know what it meant. I remember being in the car with someone who is now an out bisexual, but at the time was a lesbian, and she was like 10 years older than me. And I was like, I think I like both. I'm not sure. And she was like, no, like if you like women, like you are gay, like you'll figure it out later. And I remember my sister one day saying like okay, you maybe like women now, but later you'll like men. Like something happens whenever you're 25 where like you suddenly want to have kids. And I was just getting all these messages that were trying to fit me into a box of sexuality, and all the while I'm questioning sexuality and gender. And it wasn't until I was in college and I had a non-binary professor, Shane Wally, who's amazing, and I had a really rad therapist named Adam, and he taught me about being non-binary. And I remember one day I came to a session with him and I was like, I think I'm non-binary. And the next time I came back, he had changed all of the pronouns in his notes from the previous 3 years of seeing him.
Oh my gosh.
And he like went above and beyond to help me feel welcome. And checked in about name and frequently would be like, okay, you still want to use these pronouns? Like, how's it feeling? And just really was like a fairy godmother to me. And whenever I came to New York, I decided that every person I met, I was going to tell about my pronouns and I was going to be fully out because I was living kind of like half in, half out in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I'm not out to everyone here. Like certain jobs that I have, I don't tell them because it feels like if they reject it, it feels like really high stakes then to keep working there. And sometimes it feels easier just not to tell anyone. And that's something I'm still kind of figuring out about myself. And I'm about to move. So with that move, I am really wanting to establish more connections where people know about my pronouns and where I can be authentically myself.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you said about the flamboyant dance teacher. I have had such similar experiences. I grew up in Ohio, so not Texas, but similar, I think, in like the being in the middle of the country, I guess, like versus a coast. And I had a camp counselor, and I actually just remembered her. I don't know what her pronouns are now, but then they were her and she, her. And she had like leg hair and armpit hair and was like, had a cool mullet. And I also was like, to use your words, like perturbed and turned off, because I also was taught like that other is bad. And I think subconsciously I saw myself so much in her that I was like, I can't be seen being nice to her, because then people will automatically know that like I'm hiding something, or that I'm more like her than I'm not like her. And so that really resonated with me.
Yeah, it can feel easier to push things away whenever they're scary than to address the things within ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't come out until I came out as a lesbian at 20, because at that time I was still identifying as a woman and thought that was the word that I had to use. But I kept that in for 20 years because it was easier to run away from it than to confront it until it wasn't anymore.
Yeah, it's really scary, especially whenever we're getting all these messages in media and in our religious groups and our friend groups and our families. Like, I spent so long being so afraid to be myself. Mm-hmm. And it was this thing I had to like really have just like two different lives. And like in high school, I had two different names that I went by. Mm-hmm. And I had this joke, cause I was always just joking around and, not really ready to like address this fully and didn't even have the language to do so. But I would be like, yeah, I'm not gay, but Tammy is. Mm-hmm. And then someone would see me and I'd be like, no, that was Tammy. That was someone else. And like, mm-hmm. it was obviously me and I was just messing around, but it felt like really high stakes to come out in my high school. There weren't that many people that were out. We didn't have queer or out queer teachers. So yeah, I spent a lot of my time like that. And I like would wear this ring that had the woman symbol on it. Mm-hmm. And I remember like I would put it on and I would feel like, okay, I'm like flagging right now. Like people know that I'm queer, and it's just a silver ring with a tiny little thing that it does not show. Like people won't notice it, but I kept it under my bed. I was so afraid that someone, like my mom, was going to find it. I was so afraid like people would then know. But it's hard to address those things within ourselves. And if you don't see it around and it's not a common experience, that people are talking about, it can be really scary.
Definitely. I had this moment in therapy when I realized after years of going, every time I would talk through any kind of identity issue or thing that I was talking about, instead of saying I would say you. Hmm. And so that reminds me of what you were saying about, like, that's not me, that's Tammy, even mm-hmm. though it's like, that is you. I don't know if the word dissociating is proper to use in this scenario, but that's how I use it, at least for me, of like being outside of myself and talking about this other person, even though it's me.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. And like I was always like joking around and trying to like dodge questions via humor, because mm-hmm. it was a lot easier to have this joke persona character than to actually come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually whenever I did come out in high school, like I lost pretty much all of my friends. Mm-hmm. And I went from like being very gregarious and very happy, and I was very social, and someone who's now an out lesbian who told everyone about me being queer, when, and also like in New York now, and I'm like, but also I get like, it's complicated,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But whenever I was outed, they like my friends stopped talking to me, and people, like, I would sit down on the couch in theater and people would get up and leave, and
oh man,
I didn't have the confidence to be like, what's up, like, tell me, like, confronting it. So I just let myself go inward and get really quiet and get really depressed, and my whole like personality changed. I got really like quiet and antisocial, and it wasn't until like a couple of years ago that I kind of like came back out of that.
Mm-hmm. Like back to yourself almost.
Yeah.
Wow. I think I think it's so incredible that you did come out in high school, even though the repercussions are like the fear of why people don't come out. Do you have any, like, if you could do it over, would you do it differently?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. Mm. I think it's challenging now, because if I was in high school now, I definitely would have come out and been more unapologetic about it. I do wish that I would have at least tried to be like, yeah, I'm queer. That's who I am. At the time, probably like, yeah, I'm a lesbian. Like, and see what people said, rather mm-hmm. than it just being this like hush-hush kind of like mentality of we don't talk about it, like this like kind of Catholic quiet like sinful thing that we just that goes over there and you address it later. I do wish that I would have I guess maybe told my family, because I didn't tell them I was queer. I actually haven't told my dad. I told my mom in like 2014 on Thanksgiving. But I do wish I would have told her, because there was this one mom that was like being really mean to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was crying and she asked me what was wrong. And I said that someone had said something about me. This mom had said something about me. And she was like, well, you should go talk to her about it. Tell her how it feels. And I was like, that's terrifying. Like, she's a mom. I can't. But I wish I could have given her like the context of what was going on, and maybe she could have been supportive. I don't know what she would have felt. But I do wish that I had more allies. I had like two teachers that were pretty supportive. But I wish I could tell myself to like at least try and see how it goes.
Yeah. It's so hard.
Yeah. And now that I'm saying that, I'm kind of like, I'm giving my current self that advice, because I haven't talked to my parents about pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they will take it well. But now that I'm saying that, I'm like, oh yeah, it's not too late.
Yeah. But yeah, and it's still really hard.
And yeah.
My parents still make mistakes, and like they are trying. At least they're trying. Like, there was a period of time where they weren't, because I think it was just too hard. But we've had enough conversations where I think they finally get that they need to at least be trying. Mm. And they're getting better. But that's scary. And it's, you know, when you put yourself out there and whoever you're putting yourself out there to isn't receptive and isn't warm, especially a family member or someone that you really care about, that's like, it's just really hard.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's balancing what's more important, like meaning what's to protect yourself. Like, mm-hmm. that's what I mean, of like making sure that you're always number one. And that if you know a reaction won't be what you think it is, like maybe it's not worth, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's up to the individual, but.
Yeah. It's really tricky. It's a risk. And I have told a couple family members, and one person said, like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Mm.
And I was like, well, it's really important to me. And they were like, well, like, it just doesn't make sense. It's not, you know, all the grammatically correct.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
And I was like, I just kind of gave up, and our relationship has drifted. but since, yeah, it's really complicated. It's really hard whenever the, like, people, it's really hard having people around me in my birth family who voted for the president, who still posts racist and sexist and transphobic memes online. Like, it's hard to tell them who I am.
Yeah. It's like they're setting up so many barriers from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to, and I think, like, I feel like my reaction would be, try to have a conversation. And now my reaction is protect yourself,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I feel like we've been in this hellhole long enough to know that people who are still supporting him aren't willing to listen, or are not on the same page,
mm-hmm.
and aren't willing to get on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a self-preservation thing of, it's not even worth it.
Yeah.
Even though that can fucking suck, because it's your family, your
mm-hmm.
birth family. And all we are wired for is connection and to feel like we belong.
Mm-hmm.
And when that is taken away or at risk, that is scary. It's
right.
hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's biological.
Yep.
And the power of chosen family is real.
Yeah.
Having this family, this community in New York has been so transformative. My mental health, my creativity, everything just feels how it's, you know, supposed to feel. It's like,
yeah.
when things are rough, they're there for me. Like, using my pronouns is just, and it's easy. I've played around with other pronouns with them, and like, my friends have tried them out for a day and tried different names. Like, I've been experimenting with a couple different names recently,
mm-hmm.
and this morning I made my friend breakfast, and then she was like, she said the name, she's like, thank you, and then called me it, and I was just like, just so overwhelmed with just this joy that, like, she's taking the time, and like, and the, you know, it takes a little bit of mental energy to, like, shift
mm-hmm.
names for someone, and
yeah.
and, you know, it's not that much mental energy, but like, it's
more than nothing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And just for her to, like, call me, I was like, wow, that meant a lot.
Yeah. That's really cool. I really feel the same way about chosen family. And like, I feel lucky that anyone in my, like, birth family that I've told has been generally on board and supportive, which is really nice. But also, I also feel the power of chosen family as in being in New York, and just basically echoing everything you just said of, like, how crucial those safe spaces are to be able to try on different names and different pronouns. And I remember when I started going by Dubs full time, and where I was working at the time, like, people gave me shit about it. And I was like, I don't, like, just, you know, it's like, for me, it's like, you can expend a little bit of mental energy and, like, validate someone and respect them. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
Mm-hmm.
But like, where I work now at Keshet, it is that safe space community where we share our pronouns, and no one bats an eye at anyone's pronouns ever. And when they change, they expend that little mental energy
mm-hmm.
to do their best to make sure that they're affirming that. And I remember before I legally changed my name, I had my it's like our CFO and our office manager were sending me some kind of like tax document, and they, because it came to the Boston office, and they crossed off my dad name and wrote Dubs, and I'm gonna cry. It just was like, they didn't have to do that, but they knew that seeing my dad name was triggering and just a bad feeling. And so they took 2 seconds and fixed it. And it was just like, this, can everyone do that? Yeah. You know, it just was, it was. So I definitely think, I actually think of my colleagues as my chosen family too, because they are just, they get it on a level that so many people don't get.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was really cool. Lenny. Thank you, Lenny and Caitlin. Also, in the same vein, I'm still floored by your therapist changing your pronouns.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. This guy, can I say his name?
If you want to,
yeah. This guy's name is Adam Maurer. I actually don't know if still he, him, or a guy. So this person's name is Adam Maurer. And like, this was a big part of my coming out story, actually, that I didn't mention, was that I applied to go to a bunch of different schools. I wanted to study musical theater, but then my family really wanted me to be a nurse. And so I went to nursing school at the University of Texas, and it's actually a pretty hard nursing school to get into. So my family was like, God wanted you to be in the nursing school. Mm. Like, only 100 people get accepted. This is great. And my first semester, it was just, like, all of these cishet women and, like, mostly in sororities. And I was just so out of my element. And I felt just so uncomfortable and lost. And I went to him as a career counselor. And he was like, why are you a nursing major? And I was like, well, because my family's not going to like me for any other reason. So I want to like do this one thing. It's just one thing that I'll do. And then they'll still love me. And he was like, this is not just one thing. Like, this is a big thing. And then he, like, after that started, he became my therapist, and he really helped me transform my life and gave me so much agency. He introduced me to ethical non-monogamy and kink and all of these different like healing modalities. And he also, whenever I moved to New York, he gave me this framed portrait of the Golden Girls, and he said that they will watch over me in New York, and I still have that. I have like a little altar with like all of the special things whenever I'm like meditating or needing to like gather some energy. I go to like the altar, and it has like the like pinnacle of it is that Golden Girls portrait.
Wow. That's amazing that you had that experience and that person to help introduce you to all these things that are important and life changing.
Yeah, I am really grateful. And he saw me for so cheap. I had no money. He saw me for $10 every session.
Wow.
And I was going around to my housemates being like, can I have a dollar? Can I have a dollar? Like, I'll pay back. Like, I was making like, I don't know, like $50 a week usually. And like, that was what my life was like when I was in college, and I was on a full ride scholarship, and it paid for housing, and my housing included food. So I had like no extra money, and he was like going out of his way to care for me. And I feel so grateful for that experience and that relationship.
Wow. Adam Maurer.
Yeah. I was at, there was like after Pride, there was a genderqueer mid-afternoon frolic, and it was a party of like several hundred genderqueer people. Mm-hmm. And
I want to go.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, it was amazing. And I was standing, I was on the dance floor, and they're like playing, I want to dance with somebody. What's that?
I want to dance with somebody.
Yeah. And I was looking around, and everyone was like just so full of joy.
Yeah.
And just seeing like trans joy represented all around. And I was just thinking like, how did I get here? And whenever I trace all of the choices that I made back, it was like Adam took me on another path. he gave me a way out. He showed me that it's possible to be myself and to be authentic, and he showed me truth, and that's such a gift.
Oh, that is such a gift. Showed you truth. Wow. That's great. I'm like, my brain's on hyper, I don't know what to say. also, I want to go to that party because that sounds awesome. I think one of the first times I was ever in like an all, it wasn't all trans specific, but all queer and Jewish, was when I went to our, one of our like weekend retreats through work. And this was in March of 2017. And it was all for teenagers. So I was like one of the adults in the room, but it literally was the first time in my life where I was in a space that was solely for queer and Jewish people. And I was in tears the entire time because it was so overwhelming and so beautiful and so full of joy and support and love. And I was like, I need this more in my life because it's such a feeling.
Yeah, it is really overwhelming. The first time I was ever around just all non-binary people was at a group at Blue Stockings that a friend of mine, we became friends through the group, they facilitate. And it was so, like, I just kept finding myself tearing up because being around people that, like, just, oh, feeling like I constantly have to explain myself and feeling like the other so often is exhausting. Mm-hmm. And to just hear so many experiences echoed all around was so powerful.
Yeah, it is really powerful to not feel like you're the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I started producing like queer and trans events, and then eventually started doing trans and non-binary events, and just having a room full of all trans people, all non-binary and gender non-conforming people who are not just sharing moments of sorrow, which that is really powerful and that does have a place, but sharing joy and sharing play, those spaces have been really transformative, and ones that I've been to and ones that I've helped produce just have had such a big impact on me and my feeling comfortable with myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Community is so important.
It's so important.
To have those shared experiences and to just, I don't know, this metaphor I use is like wearing, like moving through the world always wearing a backpack, and every time you're misgendered or when I am misgendered or whatever, dead named, luckily that won't happen that much for me anymore because I've legally changed my name, but I keep saying that because I'm excited about it.
But yeah, that's exciting.
Yay, thank you.
It's a big step.
It is, and it's been such a arduous annoyance, but Bobby's been there through every step. But yeah, it was scary. Like I just did it now and I've been wanting to do it for a long time, but it's scary to like change everything.
Mm-hmm.
But also really affirming. But so this backpack metaphor is like, and every time it happens, like someone's like putting a rock or a stone or brick or something in there and the bag gets really heavy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you lose your ability. One loses, I see I'm doing it now for, mm-hmm. I think I'm still like saying you instead of I. I lose my ability to be able to be present the heavier the backpack gets. And so being in spaces where you can just take off the backpack and you're not, almost like on guard or constantly worried that someone's going to misgender you. Or if they do, you know, there's the difference between like a genuine mistake versus like someone who's just not trying.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels different. And it's, for me at least, it's easier to bounce back from when it's a genuine oopsie versus someone who just doesn't give a fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Living in a cis hetero patriarchy it's all consuming.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel like a backpack. It feels, sometimes it feels like just a full body, like way down. I like have a really hard time. I need to come back to my community and be like, wait, what is going on? This, like, to have that validation from people around me, so important, because just, yeah, having, like, it's, it's trauma that's building when people are like telling you that your truth is not truth.
Yeah.
It's othering. It's, and like you said, like it's a biological need to have community. Like we are made, we are pack animals. We're made to be cared for and to be supported by our community.
Yeah. It reminds me of what you said earlier in your story of how when you told your mom that you were a boy and you were going to marry a girl, and her response was, no, you're a girl and you're going to marry a man, you know, when you're older. And you mentioned it a few more times in your story of like being forced into these boxes where we don't belong. And that's also building trauma. And that's also, I think I'm still unpacking what all of those messages were from young age. And like, I would test the waters and see how family members and community members would react to this thing or mm-hmm. that thing, or just to gauge it and from afar.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and no one was ever like hostile, but no one was like, gay people are great,
mm-hmm.
you know, or
mm-hmm.
whatever it was. It was always, and this was also 30 years ago, so times were different, and I don't want to excuse it, but, you know, I don't know. But I was, like, a mental note, and it was, like, writing it and filing it away each time of, like, yeah. well, I'm never going to do that again because there's the reaction I got,
yeah.
or I don't want to be humiliated, so I'm never going to do that again. Like, when I would do – like, two examples that come to mind are in preschool. I think this is one of my first memories was when a bunch of the boys – were sitting in chairs backwards as if they were motorcycles, like straddling. And I did it too because it looked fun and, who, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
And the teacher was like, little girls don't sit that way.
Oof.
And it was – and I – if you know that warm wash of shame that comes over you,
yeah.
I was like, I just didn't even know why I couldn't sit that way and why, you know – and in my mind, but I didn't even have the words to describe, like, I'm not a little girl, so, like, mm-hmm. let me, like, do this. And then the other thing, did you ever play basketball?
Yeah.
So, you know how when you set picks, typically women do, like, an X across their chest, and then the men do it, like, across mm-hmm. their wheeze or their crotchal areas. It's also
That's a new one.
Yeah. It just, I always, when I would set picks, I would do it the way that, like, men are supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't even occur to me that I was doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I just did it because that's what felt right for me, and was shamed in front of the entire team that I was setting my pick wrong,
mm-hmm.
and was humiliated. And I was like, and so in doing, it's like in those moments where I had let my guard down and was just doing what was authentic for me, I got shamed so badly that I felt like each time that happened, I more and more guard was up, and
mm-hmm.
I wasn't ever able to just be present and be free or fully myself because I was so fucking scared of that humiliation
mm-hmm.
and that shame washing over me.
Yeah.
That I like did not connect for a long time to anybody, including myself.
Yeah. That really resonates with me. I had an experience where my sister we'll take that part out. A family member who's like who works with a bunch of older, like they're like 10 years older than me, and they're all like really beautiful women, and I was always like very nervous around them and thought that they were super cool. And this person, like we all went swimming together, and my family member was like, lift up your arms, show them. And I wasn't shaving my armpits, and so I like lifted them up, and I remember they all screamed, and they all were like, ew, oh my god, that's so gross, oh my god, what? And like I was like mortified.
Yeah.
Like I ended up having just like that whole day, I was just like this shame washed over me that
mm-hmm.
like these people that I really admired that were like 10 years older than me, that were very successful in a world that I wanted to be successful in, all shamed me. And I just felt, yeah, just it's an accumulation thing.
Yeah.
Like it's not just one experience. And, you know, that behavior is like not okay. And also like they are reinforcing because it was reinforced for them.
Mm-hmm.
It, and like with the example with my mom, like she was trying to get me to come with the pack. Like, come, this is what we do. This is what it's like.
This is how you stay safe.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, so it's a protection method.
Yeah.
And it's outdated. I mean, it's I don't even want to say outdated because it should have never been. But it's a protection method that is not necessary and is violent.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you a question. It just came to me right now of, like just parents in general. I read, I don't know if you saw this, op-ed, I think it was in the Times, of parents who grieve their trans child. Did you see that?
I didn't see it.
And it essentially what it boiled down to was parents who grieve their child who is trans are transphobic, because you're boiling down a person to their identity, and not giving way to like nuance and who like that there's more to someone than just their gender identity. And I'm curious what your thoughts are, and it, without more context, it might be hard, but I know I had trouble with that because I don't necessarily think, am I like, I read it a few times and I don't know that I think that a parent grieving their child is transphobic. I think it can be hurtful to know, I think of it more of like when one person transitions, the whole family transitions, because we're all getting used to new words and new ways of relating to each other. But I think if it's done with care, I think that there is a loss of just thinking about me, like you were my daughter and now you aren't. And so there is a factor of loss there.
Or gain.
I think it could be both. Like it's a loss of a daughter, but a gain of a child who's way happier and more connected and living life authentically and happily. So I think it's like if it stops at loss and you don't acknowledge the gain, I think that's where transphobia comes in. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about grieving in general. And we are always grieving our past selves, and we're grieving who we wanted to be. I think there's a problem in projecting anything onto another person.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I feel like we should grieve, is the time where you were projecting something onto another person that caused them pain. That feels like the tragedy. I mean, if your kid grows up and is not the baseball player you wanted them to be, then, you wanted them, you were putting something on them that they didn't want or that didn't happen, and that's the part where it's tricky, and that's the part where I feel like reflection needs to be done on why you have those expectations and what you think you're losing. Because I feel like whenever someone tells you the truth about themselves, that's a gain, that's a win, that's you've raised a kid who is living so authentically that they're going against what society is telling them to do, what messages that are instilled in them from birth are telling them to do, and that's a win.
Yeah, totally. I like the way you explain things. So eloquent. I love it. I just want to keep asking you questions. Well, this is what this is for. I will keep asking you questions. I also, just really quick, and then I will ask you another question. But this is reminding me of, you had mentioned a person who at the time was not out, but is now an out lesbian, but outed you to everybody. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of this person in high school who I actually have no idea if they identify as queer at all now, but then I bullied them for being queer. And it was, I think it might have been in the same way of as we were talking about earlier too, about our teachers or in our counselors, of if I bully this person or if I out this person, then no one will think that about me. But I actually just recently apologized to her for being mean to her in high school. And she took it really nicely and then also was like, yeah, but you were kind of an asshole. And I was like, yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying sorry. But anyways, okay, so I want to go back to you. we're talking about, actually, I'm going to switch gears. I saw recently that you did, that you've been examining toxic monogamy. And I would love for you to talk more about what that is and how you were studying it and how media affects our relationships. Because I think, because you brought it up too earlier too about just like how much that affects us. And so I would love to hear more about that.
Great. Yeah. So I do performance art, and part of that is working with an acrobatic partner, and we do acro drag burlesque. And each time we try to focus on a different topic that we feel like is important to us. And last month we did a show, we did a piece around toxic masculinity and toxic monogamy. And after talking about it for hours on end, and just we created the piece, we talked about it, we created the piece, we talked about it again, we were just discussing it, it was just always on our minds. We kind of broke down that a lot of what we see as queerphobia or transphobia can be rooted back to toxic monogamy, which is the idea that once you find your one true love, everything will be fixed, no matter any practical, like, reasons why you shouldn't be together. Like, love will prevail, and when you're, like, together forever, like, you won't be jealous, everything will be perfect, like, you don't need to work things out or talk about things, it'll just, like, you find true love, and things work out. It's the fairy tale Disney story. And that's what a lot of our media is centered around. And it typically follows the gender roles, man, woman. Even if there is queer representation, it's usually like thin white butch or thin white mask man, thin white femme man, or like, there's a lot of like, another like side note of like, typically like cis, gay, white, thin folks, like, upper class usually, like, just buying into the system and kind of like assimilating into it, and how it's not like actually pushing the boundaries of what queerness is. We examined Grease, the musical, and we did a piece where like falling in love and getting along and things are great, and then someone walks by, our friend Shelton, who hosts this burlesque show at House of Yes. He walks by, and my acro partner like checks him out, and I get really mad, and I like shove him. He's like playing Danny from Grease, so I like shove Danny back, and instead of Grease lightning, we do straight fighting. And how we just do that, like, we have this fight scene, and then in the end, like, Danny proposes to Sandy to like make it all better, like, since I was really mad, and then it's like we'll always be together, but it's like devolving and like crying, like, just like we'll always be together, like, dancing and happy, and I have like a baby bump and a balloon that says it's a girl. But through this piece, we really examined that, like, if you're not fitting into these, like, two binary systems of, like, man, woman, one man, one woman, they go together, everything works. If you are bisexual, that's a threat, because, like, then the people that you might be attracted to doubles or quadruples, and if you're trans, like, it's like, how do you even place that? Like, who's attracted to who? Like, how does this, whom? Sorry, please edit that in. It's very important. No, I'm just kidding. Grammar is classist.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like I went on a long tangent on that one, but I don't, the post I made is definitely more eloquently written.
Yeah, it was, I, Yeah, it's so interesting. Now I have Grease stuck in my head. I'm a Ramble, I'm a Ding Dong, will always be there. But yeah, it's so, what I appreciate about you is that I feel like I learn a lot from your social media, and you're not afraid to just post what's like. I was reading through the comments, and like, it didn't seem like that many people were giving you a hard time about this, but I feel like a lot of times people can feel threatened by what is.
It's because of a very conscious effort to weed out my social media.
I gotcha. Okay.
Which people have pushed back on me with. They're like, you should, like, why aren't you friends with people from your high school? Why do you delete people so often? And I'm like, I want Facebook I want my social media to be a space where I can express myself.
Yeah.
But I did used to get a lot of pushback, mm-hmm. even like non-binary, like coming out, like, but I usually just like sift through, like I have a method of weeding through people. But yeah, I mean, one person was like, this is monogamy really the enemy? And I was like, that's the point.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I did see that. I was waiting for it to be much, because then they were like, after like one post of education, like, I can get behind that. Yeah. I was like, oh, what? That never happens.
Yeah, good people.
Yeah, I also I go back and forth between, defriending or blocking people, but then I have friends say like the only way they're gonna learn is if, you know, they're being exposed and can ask questions. And yes, and I don't want to always be the educator, yeah. even though that's my I think especially also because I do it for my day job all day, every day, that sometimes I want social media to be not that.
Right.
Even though I do curate it mostly to be that.
Yeah.
But I usually will like unfollow people so I don't have to see their stuff. And then I don't know how many people have unfollowed me or unfriended me, but I think it's all about like what your boundaries are and what makes it feel safest to be able to log in.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not our job to educate people. And if people want to get educated, there's so many resources online. Like, just a simple search can give you so many answers. There's videos of people going on about whatever they're passionate about. And much of that is gender and sexuality. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people to do their own research. And then if it's a pal, like, you know, checking in, that's different than just like, hey, like, give me your emotional labor and time right now without asking, without a check-in.
Yeah. I think it was a year ago, either today or yesterday, when they were talking about removing, like, essentially, like, erasing trans people from, like, the definitions of, I can't remember, it's like Bobby, do you remember what I'm talking about?
Health and Human Services.
Thank you. Health and Human Services. I knew it was right there.
I hit the landing and I'll edit it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And I remember posting about how upset I was about it. And people, it was almost in this instance of like folks who, these are the people I was trying to educate, like folks from Ohio and wanting to see like the ramifications of the government being the way that they are. They have real effects on real humans. But so many people were messaging me, asking me like, what's happening? And can you tell me what's going on? And I eventually was like, no. Like at first I was like trying to explain it, because I was like, okay, this is my job. I got to do this. This is my chance. And then eventually I just was like, no. I was like, do your own research and ask someone else. Like, I don't want to always have to be the one to tell you.
Yeah.
Because I'm dealing with it. This is affecting my real life. And then I don't want to have to like then ease your burden because you understand what's going on.
Right. Yeah. And it's important for like folks not to reach out to people experiencing oppression and ask them for their time and labor, especially white folks reaching out to people of color and being like, tell me about, is this racist? It's like, no, confront your own racism in I want to live in a world where people can work through their shit and not put it on the people who are experiencing oppression on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. And if you want someone to come in and teach a workshop, pay them.
Yeah.
Like, if you want our labor, pay us. Mm-hmm. Because it's not only... It's like, it's labor in lots of different ways. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, it's just, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's not just your time. It's
right.
It's your collection of memories and traumas that you've worked through and the time you spent educating yourself and the bravery it takes to show up and do it. And the knowledge that you carry is power.
Yeah.
And if people want that, like, there has to be a trade.
Yeah. See, you said it so much better than me. It's so eloquent. All right. I wanted to move us into our – I don't want to, but I need to move us into our last section, which is the rapid fire questions.
Great.
Just answer as quickly as possible. There are no wrong answers. Okay. Writing or reading?
Oh, writing or reading?
Yeah.
Writing.
Acting or singing?
Singing.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Biking or running?
Biking.
Bagels or donuts? Gluten-free.
Oh, bagels.
Nice. Train or plane?
Train.
Pants or shorts?
None.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Night or day?
Night.
Favorite dessert?
Oh, red velvet cupcakes.
Yes, and that's what we have. Ooh. One for you. How about that? Also, I noticed you were about to say neither and then felt like you had to answer. Neither is an option.
Thank you.
So just wanted you to know that. But wow. You're not spectrum. Forced, right? You're not forced to pick one, except I guess kind of it is.
That.
Maybe we should rethink.
Well, this is a binary game, Dubs.
I know. I was not thinking. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I know you were talking about curating your social media, but do you have social media that you would want people to follow you on?
Yeah. I'm moving. So yeah. Acro duo is taking a break, but we're Acrothalians, Acrothelians, on Instagram. And our stage names are Dick Transdyke and Mary Timey Moore. I would love to come back and do gigs with my acro partners. He's amazing. And then Bloomsy on Instagram with 3 Y's. All the other blooms are taken.
But with 3 Y's is great.
3 Y's is, yeah, it's there. It's working so far. Cool. Also, can I... thank you.
You can, sure. Okay.
I've been thinking about this a lot because whenever I first came to New York, I didn't really know many people, and I didn't know many people in the improv scene that weren't cishet white men. And you had created Thank You for Coming Out as a space for queer people to come together, and it was the first queer show I've ever been in, and I went, when I was leaving, I cried. I was just so overwhelmed with the power of the space that you created and to see that how much it's grown. It's the show that I've done the most in New York. It's something I always try to make time for because it's so powerful. And what you're doing is important and it's life-changing and it's something that has been a root for me in a city that's so overwhelming, and I'm really grateful. So thank you for having that, and thank you for making this. I'm really happy to see that this is going to spread even further than the theater. This is powerful work.
Thank you so much. That's so heartwarming. If I talk more, I'll cry. So thank you so much. Thank you for coming out.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming out.
Hey, it's Dubs Weinblatt, your host of Thank You for Coming Out. Thank you so much for listening with an open heart and an open mind. Please subscribe to our podcast on the platform of your choice, and don't forget to rate and review us. It really helps.